Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Is Tuesday on the Savage Nation. The thing about these long holiday weekends, thanks, Fats. Give them a tarball and we'll see them in the casino. The thing about these long holiday weekends is that they're like leap years. You don't know what day it is. People say it's Monday, it's Sunday, it's Tuesday. But it's Tuesday on the Savage Nation. And there are a lot of controversies being caused by the communist president. The latest is the former NASA director says that it's actually the current NASA director, appointed by Obama, Charles Bolden, says that his most important job for NASA is to reach out to the Muslim world. He says he wants a new beginning between the U.S. and the Muslim world, and that Obama told him that his most important job is to engage with the Muslim world. Now, remember who we're talking about now. This is the head of NASA, the administrator of NASA. He says the most important task he has, according to Obama, is to make the Muslims feel good about their historic contributions to science and engineering. Now, I have a question for you. Can anyone listening to this show name anything that has been, let us say, contributed to the world of science or medicine in the last 1,000 years by the Muslim world? Now, to be fair to the discussion, there was a golden age in the history of the Muslim world, during which time they developed algebra and Arabic numerals. They gave us the zero. In the field of astronomy, they made an advancement. The ancients developed advanced surgical instruments for their time, and they developed, as I say, the concept of zero. But these accomplishments were about 800 years ago. Now, what have the radical Muslims of today contributed to science? Would that be the science of explosive devices? The advancements of female circumcision? Will there soon be a Riyadh university for advanced terrorist training? The bottom line is that in terms of science and medicine, the Muslim world has gone from the concept of zero to actual zero in a single millennium. And I have to ask you, what kind of president do we have that he would tell the head of the NASA, National Aeronautics and Space Administration, to go out and make outreach to the Muslim world because they can help us with our advancements in science and engineering? I have to ask you else. What do you think has paralyzed the Muslim world for the last 1,000 years? Was it that other empires pushed the Muslims out of the way? Did the evil Europeans conspire against the Muslims to steal all their great inventions after the year 1200? Or was it something inherent to the Muslim world itself, something more fundamental? Could it be that the increasing extremism of their religion after their golden age led the Arab Muslim world down the path of decline and destruction? I will let the Savage Nation make up its own mind. But let us go back to the NASA director himself, Mr. Bolden, who has been appointed to the head of NASA. Now, I have to say off the bat that Mr. Bolden is a tremendous man with tremendous accomplishments. Mr. Bolden was commissioned as a lieutenant in the Marines following graduation from the U.S. Naval Academy in 1968. Mr. Bolden flew more than 100 missions as a pilot in Vietnam. Mr. Bolden served as a test pilot, and after more than 6,000 hours of flight time, was chosen to be an astronaut on the space shuttle back in 1981. He returned to active Marine Corps duty in 1994. He commanded troops in Kuwait and rose to the rank of Major General. And then he was appointed by Obama to head NASA in 2009. I have to say this. I applaud Charles Bolden's amazing career. not because he should be praised for the insane remarks he was told to say by our incompetent president. On the contrary, the fact that his career to this point had been so brilliant highlights the enormity of Obama's inadequacies. President Obama has managed to poison the mind of a man who has given so many decades of real service to this nation. Look, Bolden was the kind of man who could have been the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Bolden could have been Secretary of State. Bolden is the kind of man who could have been president. He's far more qualified than Obama himself. But instead, Bolden fell under the influence of a smooth-talking Chicago politician who frankly poisoned his mind. Obama has destroyed a great man. Instead of emboldening America, Mr. Bolden emboldened the Muslims. I want to play for you a few clips so that you know what I'm talking about. Look, I know that most people today are still on vacation mode. You don't even know what I'm talking about. You don't know whether the show is coming to you live over a radio broadcast or through your filling. You don't know whether this is a nightmare or a dream. It is The Savage Nation, a show heard on over 310 stations across America, the third most powerful radio show in the United States of America, and your host is yours truly, Michael Savage. Let's listen to clips 1, 2, and 3.
I know it's very rude to ask this of a guest, but my first question to you is, why are you here in the region?
Oh, I appreciate you asking the question. I'm here in the region. It's sort of the first anniversary of President Barack Obama's visit to Cairo and his speech there when he gave what has now become known as Obama's Cairo Initiative, where he announced that he really wanted this to be a new beginning of the relationship between the United States and the Muslim world. When I became the NAS administrator, or before I became the NAS administrator, he charged me with three things. One was he wanted me to help re-inspire children to want to get into science and math. He wanted me to expand our international relationships. And third, and perhaps foremost, he wanted me to find a way to reach out to the Muslim world and engage much more with dominantly Muslim nations to help them feel good about their historic contribution to science and engineering.
Now you have some diplomatic.
Let's stop right here. To feel good about their historic contributions to science and engineering. Remember who this is. This is not a school teacher. This is not a school teacher. This is a man who was told by our incompetent president to reach out to Muslim countries in order to make them feel good about their historic contributions to science and engineering. As I have already shown you, the last major contributions by Muslim nations to science and engineering occurred about 800 years ago. How in the world can you not see what is going on? How can you engage with the dominantly Muslim nations and help them feel good about their historic contribution to science and math and engineering when they haven't done anything in those fields in over 1,000 years? How is that possible? How could you see an agency like NASA destroyed under Obama like this and not see what he's doing to this country? And so I have to ask you, don't you get the picture yet of what Obama is doing to this country? I know most of you want to talk about steel. Leave me alone with steel. Leave me alone already. Steel said what needed to be said. He said the exact right thing, but you've covered that already on 10 radio shows today, and I'm not going to relive it. Mr. Steele is probably a fan of the Savage Nation. The reason I say that is because he invited me to speak at the lead speaker at the RNC a few years ago, and I was unable to attend. So he's a smart man. He listens to this show. What did he actually say? He said that Afghanistan is Obama's war. It is Obama's war. Whose war is it? And he was attacked by who for this? The shameful John McCain? Attacked by the quisling Lindsey Graham, who is the McCain of our time? And so the fact of the matter is most Americans have cooled on the Afghanistan war. They don't want to be there, particularly those whose children are dying in Afghanistan. They have no reason to be there. They don't know why they're there. Nobody knows why they're there, by the way. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. If you care to comment on any or all of these topics, I guess you could call the show. And while you do, I think I'm going to tell you about a pizza story, my pizza story. I had no barbecue this year. I've given up entertaining my friends because they never reciprocate. And if they do reciprocate, they're usually terrible cheap barbecues, so I don't go anyway. When I do a barbecue, I spend a lot of money and have really high-end food. If they invite you back, it's usually a few Hebrew Nationals and a cheap a beer from Mexico that was out of date that they found in the back of the refrigerator. So I stopped going. So I was just into one of my moods of leave me alone. I can't wait till the holiday is over. It's cold out here, by the way. I know the East Coast is sweltering right now, like 90, 100, 110 degrees. And I live in San Francisco because it is the most beautiful place on earth in the summer. It was 49 this morning. The fog comes in blowing over the hills out of the ocean. And you're like, I need an overcoat and a scarf and a wool hat today, which I love. I adore it. My face is cool. I need gloves. People don't understand it. I mean, if you're a heat lover, God bless you. I'm not. You know, I could do without waiting for global warming. So the fact is, I figured enough is enough. I ordered a pizza. I just wanted a pizza for July 4th at night. I've been on a no-dairy diet for about a year and 6 months now because I had some very severe aches in my, I'm going to tell you point blank, in my arches and my hands. And I remember writing my own books, and I said, Doctor, heal thyself. Read your own books. And I said, my God, that's right. Don't eat dairy if you're allergic to it, if you are deficient in lactase, as I apparently am. Cut the dairy out. Well, I cut it out, and after a few weeks, all these severe aches went away. I'm telling you, it was so bad. I was seeing foot doctors and this and that. So I haven't had pizza in a year and a half, which I'm crazy about pizza. I crave it. But a great doctor friend of mine taught me 20 years ago that we usually are addicted to that which we are allergic to. We are addicted to that which we are allergic to. Did you know that? The things you crave are the things that make you sick, whether it be in foods or drink or sex. Think about what I just said to you. So anyway, I broke the addiction to dairy. I mean, 100% none, zero, and all the pains went away. So I order a pizza. Now, here's the first mistake. I ordered a pizza. Here's the second mistake. I ordered a pizza from someone who's not Italian who just bought a local pizza franchise who can hardly speak English. Here's my third mistake. I believed it would be there when he said it would be there. Here's my fourth mistake. I blew up on the phone when it wasn't there on time. And I'll tell you the rest of the story when I return right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Yes, it's me and I'm in love again. Had no love and say you know when. You know I love you.
Okay. So our genius president takes a wonderful man with tremendous accomplishments named Bolden, a real naval aviator, a test pilot, an astronaut, destroys him by turning him into a dunce and tells him to go out and reach out to the Muslim world in order to get them involved in their advancements in science and engineering when there have been none in the Muslim world in over 1,000 years. So having said that, I realize you're not interested in that. And so therefore, we will do the Al Gore sex tapes, which I know you will be interested in again, although I played them last Thursday. They were a very big hit, and we must play the Al Gore sex tapes in order to make sure you understand why Al Gore is so obsessed with global warming. It's because he's apparently constantly in heat, and because he has such a high internal temperature, he is actually projecting his internal temperature upon his vision of the Earth, and he thinks everybody's in heat. In fact, he's so hot all the time for over-the-hill masseuses that he thinks his heat is enough to melt the polar ice caps. And so we will definitely play with the Al Gore sex tapes on the Savage Nation. And so if you didn't hear the tape before, we were talking about the Muslim world being outreached by NASA in order to make them feel good about their historic contributions to science and engineering, which is about as stupid as you can get for an organization like NASA. Chicago, Steve, you're next up. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, in the Middle Ages, the Arabs named the stars. A lot of them still have Arab names.
That's right. I'm fully aware of that. But that was, what, 500, 600 years ago?
Yeah, apparently Obama believes in Arab exceptionalism instead of American exceptionalism.
Why is he still harboring such a glowing view of what a few Muslims did 600 years ago, as opposed to what Americans have been doing right up until the current time?
The way he was raised in Malaysia there.
There's some obsession with him with the Muslim world. Okay, well, I think we made the point. There's no point in moving on. 1-800-4, and then he met with Netanyahu today. Now, the last time Netanyahu came, I think he was busy doing something else and, you know, didn't meet with him or something. It was like a scandal. But apparently the big donors to the Democrat Party, who are also supporters of Israel, must have threatened to dry up and give the money to a Republican. All of a sudden today, Obama, like the a president that he really is, meaning the legislative, suddenly was kissing the ring of Netanyahu. It was embarrassing, by the way, both ways. I personally don't like him pandering to Netanyahu. I'm not a fan of Netanyahu, by the way. I think Netanyahu is a classic politician who lied to the Israeli people about the fact that he would be tough when he became prime minister. And what he did nothing differently than the previous administration. They're all about the same. Politicians are about the same in every country today. We don't get the best and the brightest anymore. We get the worst and the dumbest. Or sometimes we get the worst and the brightest combined, which is absolutely the most dangerous combination. It wouldn't be bad enough if it was the worst and the dumbest. I think we're getting the worst and the brightest. The worst character with the brightest minds become politicians. That is a dangerous cocktail. Do we have the Al Gore sex tapes yet? Because we have them. I don't have them in front of me, but let us begin. No, because my salacious audience, my audience wants to hear. Did you miss that last Thursday, guys, who are listening to the show? They had the masseuse who waited apparently 5 years to come forward with her trauma, that Al Gore kissed her and threw himself upon her, and that her heart was broken over. She was just so traumatized. I always find that laughable, number one, in the sense that, well, I have a kind of old-fashioned view of massage, which is not exactly the current view. To me, I don't know the difference between massage and sex workers. I know that there is some kind of invisible apparent barrier between the two, and I know many of you will be offended, but it's like it's the old rubric. I mean, how do you tell the difference between massage and a sex worker? Maybe I'm old-fashioned, but the Romans thought that actors and actresses were no different than prostitutes. But then again, they looked up to prostitutes, so in a way it was a compliment. And compared to the actors and actresses of today, I would take a prostitute over most of the Hollywood actors, because at least with a prostitute, you know what you're getting, and they don't pretend to be anything but. Whereas with the actor, they pretend to be something they aren't, and then they wind up like Oliver Stone glorifying the Hitlers of our time and saying they're not glorifying the Hitlers of our time. What do you think has paralyzed the Muslim world for the last 1,000 years? What has paralyzed otherwise brilliant people from doing anything in science, engineering, and mathematics? You want to take a shot at that one, or you want to hear the Al Gore sex tapes?
Savage.
I found my thrill.
So Obama, who has virtually wrecked, he's like a wrecking ball going through every institution of America. I only wait for the day that one of his major initiatives is challenged and taken to the Supreme Court, so that this would-be dictator is finally put in his place. We know that he's trying to destroy our nuclear capacities. We know that he's trying to destroy NASA. We know he's destroyed the best, or will destroy the greatest healthcare system the world has ever seen, unless he is reversed at the Supreme Court level. We do know that he's taken over General Motors. We do know that he bailed out his cronies through the stimulus and TARP money. We know all of this. We also know that he has a sort of distaste for the United States of America, and a somewhat almost astonishingly naive, or shall I say somewhat, I'm puzzled by it, love of the Muslim world that makes no sense. Why would he say that he wants to help Muslim nations develop space programs? And why would he point to Indonesia, the world's largest Muslim nation, as a possible partner? Why? Quote, "We really like Indonesia because the State Department, the Department of Education, and other agencies in the U.S. are reaching out to Indonesia as the largest Muslim nation in the world," he said. So we're going to take tax dollars, which we don't have, and we're going to help Indonesia develop a space program while destroying our own? Look, it's pretty clear to me that we have an incompetent president, virtually an Alice in Wonderland administration. 1-800-449-8255. Mark in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation.
This is the strangest story I've ever heard. I mean, I'm sure he's a very competent, but I think he's trying to tell us how incompetent Obama is. It would be like from a Three Stooges skit, Michael. A NASA director, even if he's not intimately technologically involved on every level, it's a multi-billion-dollar program. As much as Obama's gutted it, they have project after project after project. How could a goal be to educate the Muslim world that you guys were smart 800 years ago?
I don't know. But you got to remember something. On the face of it, you start by saying, well, let's look at the NASA administrator who Obama appointed. Let's start with that. And you say, well, he must be a dummy, right? That he put some dummy in there to simply follow his orders. That is the furthest thing from the truth. Charles Bolden is a distinguished astronaut, a distinguished Marine flyer, a distinguished naval aviator. He flew 100 missions in Vietnam. But having said all of that, he's not competent to be the head of NASA. He's not an engineer, incidentally. So to pick somebody who is simply a war hero, if you want to call him that, is not good enough. You need to pick an engineer. You need to pick a scientist. That's and an administrator at the same time, by the way. They're not one and the same. Who can run an agency of this size. But to pick a man like this and to bring him down to the level of the dunces in the Obama administration is a disgrace on two counts. That's all. Pennsylvania, Gene, you're on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Mike, at some point, I'd like to hear what happened to the pizza.
Right. Now, that's probably as important as what happened to NASA, is what happened to my pizza on July 4th, right?
Yeah,
so when we left off on that side story, I was not going to do a barbecue because I'm sick and tired of entertaining friends who don't reciprocate. So I said, you know what, I'm just going to stay home and have a pizza, right? Is that what? And then, so I call a pizza place, and I haven't had one in a year and a half. And the guy answers, I must tell you, he was not Italian. That's okay. I could hardly make out his accent, but it sounded like some kind of lower Shanghainese accent to the best of my ability to understand it, which unto itself is not a problem in that I don't really care who owns a pizzeria if they could still make pizza. For example, the Brazilians make the best pizza in America, incidentally. Brazilian pizza is by and large the best. Well, many of them are of Italian heritage, but that's irrelevant. So I said, okay, how long will the pizza take? Now, I want to tell you what a large pizza costs in my community. 30 smackers. I said, $30 for a large pizza? Are you kidding me? No, he says, that's the price. I figured, all right, I'm not going to quibble. I just didn't have the strength for it. All right, send it. I said, but be sure you send the condiments. Why comment? What do you mean comment? I said condiments. I didn't say comments. I didn't say send me the comments. I said send me the condiments. What? Come on. I said, I want the Parmesan cheese. I want the red pepper. You know, all of those little packets of garbage that cost them nothing. Okay. How long will it take? He says, 45 minutes. Thank you. Goodbye. Now, it's 6:30. So I figured, all right, I'm hungry. By 7:15, the pie will be there. I call a friend in the city. Now, remember, I'm not in San Francisco at this time. My house is about 30 minutes out of the city. Call a friend. They said, you want to come over? Okay, I'll come over. My friend arrives from San Francisco, and the pizza is still not there. Now it's an hour. I call up the friendly pizza man, and I say, I called you an hour ago. Where's the pizza? And he argues with me. He says, no, it was 59 minutes ago. I said, but you said 45 minutes. We're running late. And he says, don't get so excited. Here's the part that burned me. He said, don't get so excited. It's only a pizza. He had the nerve to say that to me. It's only a pizza. You hear the guy buys a franchise, and he's telling me it's only pizza. So I'm boiling already. But I figured, look, they could spit in it or worse. I didn't say anything. I bit my tongue. I said, make sure the man has the condiments. Another 15 minutes already, my neck is swollen from anger. Ring, ring goes the bell. I open the gate. A guy arrives with the pizza. And I said, open it up. I want to make sure it's hot. He looks at me like with his lower jaw is hanging like a slattern. Like he just came off a pyramid somewhere in South America. He was just busy working on a pyramid. And he said, I said, where are the condiments? He says, I don't know what you're, like in broken English, what are you talking about? You didn't ask for them. I said, get it out of here. I don't want it. Take it. Goodbye. Take it. I don't care. Goodbye. Get out of here. Get off my property. I threw him off the property. I call up the owner. I said, do you know that your driver showed up without the cheese? And so he says to me, well, you mean he didn't have it in his car? I said, you're asking me what he had in his car? And we had an argument, and I said, you know what? You're never going to make it in this town if you have that attitude. You don't belong in the food business. And I hung up. So then I'm starving. Meanwhile, I invite a friend out from the city, and there's nothing on the table except homegrown garlic, which I had chopped up and put in oil. And I had just picked some oregano from my garden, from a little garden I keep, and put the oregano out. I mean, I really like to eat right, okay? Meanwhile, there's no pizza. So I said, let's jump in the car. Jump in the car. We go to the corner. There's a Brazilian pizza guy. I call it in. By the time I get there, it's ready. I eat it. I get it. We're back. Boom. We were so hungry, we ordered two slices while we were waiting for the pie to be hot. But that's the pizza story. It just shows you today that nothing is right. Nothing is right in this country anymore. It's the attitude. The work ethic is gone. There's no desire to please the customer, and there's no desire in the government to please the taxpayer. Everybody has a middle finger in the air. You take a look at my website today. There's a story that could really boil you. It's about a fireman in New York with a full disability pension who was also a triathlete at the same time, a little double dipping. He claims he got a little lung disorder in his last few months, scamming the system. Now, there's been no greater supporter of cops and firemen than Michael Savage. But enough is enough is enough. Their pensions are bankrupting cities and states and the government across the land. And as sure as I sit here, whether you want to hear it from me or you don't want to hear it from me, it's happening. Even liberals now are challenging cops and firemen with regard to their grotesque, gargantuan pensions. And that's because so many of them have scammed the system. What they do is in their last year, they come up with a fake illness and they claim that they got it on the job. As a result of it, they go out on disability at 85 or 100% of their last year's salary with no taxes, no city, no state, no federal taxes paid, because it's called a disability pension. Then they go and they either open a business or they get another job. And they think that they're different than a criminal. I like to know how that's different than a guy who robbed a company or robbed a bank or somebody who scammed somebody's credit. I'd like to know how that's any different. No, this is not all right. It is wrong. It is wrong. Disability pensions were set up for a reason. They were set up to help people who were severely injured on the job, whether fighting a fire or rescuing somebody in a police action, not for somebody with a fake back injury or a fake lung injury. So this character, you got to read this story. I put it up because it got me so angry on my website, Michael Savage. I got it from the New York Post. It got me very angry because I know how many of you work so hard and take home so little. And then I look at people like this and we give them our trust, don't we? We look up to men in uniform, don't we? And yet we see so many of them abusing the system that it can't go on. It's going to break. The system is broken. So here's the story. $86,000 disability pension for Marathon Man. And his name is Lieutenant John McLaughlin. It's from the New York Post. So if you think, oh, it's going to be an illegal immigrant, you're wrong. No, no. McLaughlin's ancestors came here a long while ago. And here's what they say. Retired FDNY Lieutenant John McLaughlin has literally run off with a fat tax-exempt disability pension, despite being known as Iron Man in Long Island hometown where he regularly trains and competes as a triathlete, the Post has learned. The 55-year-old Long Beach councilman was deemed an asthmatic with diminished lung capacity when the city granted him a three-quarters pay, $86,000 a year, disability pension 2 months after 9/11, earning him the sarcastic moniker Johnny Lungs among neighbors. The disabled man places high in local and regional races and frequently wins his age group, running impressive six-minute miles. He's often seen jogging and biking on the Long Beach boardwalk. Okay? So how did he wind up with a disability pension? Well, how did he do it? Because it's very simple. The unions have set it up so that any cop or fireman, especially in New York, can get a disability pension in the last year, a tax-free disability pension. His friends call him Johnny Lungs because of his disability. Everyone knows it's a joke, said one Long Beach insider. He's known as the Iron Man, and he competes in races. Reached last week, McLaughlin defended his pension as legitimate. He read from the FDNY Medical and Pension Board papers that diagnosed him with, quote, bronchial asthma. Under the so-called lung bill, a condition that results in reduced respiratory function is presumed job-related for pension purposes. Now, let me explain something. The lung bill was put in place for firemen who had their lungs damaged during fires, okay? He claims that it was because of his job. But the fact of the matter is he declared this injury before 9/11 occurred, 2 months before it. FDNY doctors, Fire Department New York doctors, have insisted it's not their fault that they're approving lucrative disability pensions that are exempt from state and local income taxes. The doctors said state laws passed by labor-friendly state legislatures forced them to okay generous disability payouts, even if there's no conclusive evidence linking the firefighters' conditions to their jobs. Now, is it any wonder why people have no respect anymore for this? I mean, really, what is the average life of a fireman today? 9 a.m., work out on the weights in the firehouse. 11 a.m., perfect your low-fat cooking skill. 1 p.m., respond to a false alarm. 3 p.m., take a nap. 5 o'clock, it's Pauhana beer time. And then there are far too many firehouses. There are far too many firehouses throughout America. They need to be amalgamated into single units that respond to an entirely large area. This is all part of the union legislature complex. I'll be right back. Savage.
When I became the NASA administrator, or before I became the NASA administrator, he charged me with three things. One was he wanted me to help re-inspire children to want to get into science and math. He wanted me to expand our international relationships. And third, and perhaps foremost, he wanted me to find a way to reach out to the Muslim world and engage much more with dominantly Muslim nations to help them feel good about their historic contribution to science and engineering.
Now, this is astonishing. That the new head of NASA, Charles Bolden, a distinguished astronaut, a distinguished naval aviator, a Vietnam pilot, first of all, he's not qualified to be the head of NASA. He has no engineering background whatsoever. See, the two things are not the same. But Obama has never really looked at a person's actual qualifications. A, he looks at their, racial composition. Shall we start with that? Does that work for you? And then he wants to reach out and turn every agency into some kind of Mr. Rogers feel-good agency. That is a disaster. It will destroy NASA to the point where it becomes nothing. This is not a division of the State Department, NASA. It was never supposed to be such. Now, there is no reason that we shouldn't reach out to the Muslim world, but in a realistic way, not in some falsified manner to make them feel good. I don't understand this feel-good stuff. This is such liberalism, it's a stereotype of liberalism, the feel-goodism of liberalism. Yes, it's true that the Muslim world made significant contributions to science over 800 years ago. They developed the concept of zero, but that's the last advancement in mathematics that I know of. They developed algebra and Arabic numerals. Wonderful, they were much smoother than the Roman numerals. Great advancement. They made some advancements in astronomy. They developed advanced surgical instruments for their time, but they were 800 years ago. So I really think the more important question is, why did the Christian world advance and why did the Muslim world become petrified, literally petrified, and make no advancements in science for a millennia? Now, I have studied this, actually, and I actually did a show on this 6 years ago, I believe, 4 years ago. I don't remember the date. And it was my intuitive guess that the reason the West had thrived until recently is because of the religion of Christianity. Christianity is an ennobling religion that teaches man his importance in the universe. It ennobles the individual. Christianity, modern Christianity, we're not talking about ancient Christianity. Modern Christianity ennobles the individual. But I want you to compare that with Islam, which subjugates the individual. It does not create the individual, it does not create in the individual any sense of individualism. It teaches the individual that he is an agent of Allah, that he is part of a mass, that he is not individual in essence. You don't have to argue with me because I'm right. You can argue with me, but you won't prove me wrong. Let's put it to you that way. And so, therefore, I think that the problem lies not in the fact that the Arabs are not intelligent. They're super intelligent. The Arab mind is one of the most brilliant minds on the planet when properly nurtured. But when imprisoned, when oppressed, like all other people, it ceases to develop. And so the only advancements that have been made that I know of by people of Muslim faith are those who emigrated to the West. People who emigrated to the West and enjoyed the freedoms of the West, but not in their home countries. And that's because the home countries are virtual prisons, literal and virtual prisons. Houston, Texas, Mario, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
How's it going? I don't agree at all that the Muslim world is at all dormant or has made, in any sense, historical contributions. If anything, their recent contributions to science and research and engineering are quite recent and very significant.
Hold on. Okay, so name three of them.
Three of them. Well, I can say that as a biomedical engineer, a recent biomedical engineer from Arizona State, over 25% of my graduating class was Muslim.
Now, hold on, but they were here in America, weren't they?
True, but you have
So you're confirming what I just said.
Well,
but their advancements were not made in the Muslim world, were they?
Well, considering that the seat of science and engineering is not currently in the Muslim world, it would be hard for them to have any reasonable success in their home countries.
Well, wait, so you're bending over backwards to explain why they can't advance in their own country, and you're justifying the fact that you bring in foreign engineering students and teach them American technology, and then they make advancements, and then you say it's because they're Muslim?
But how is it American technology if most of the chemistry I was taught was, in fact, German?
Well, now you're trying to change the argument, but you're not winning any points, are you? The chemistry that you are using was not developed in the Muslim world, though. If you want to use that tack, let's go down that road.
Well, sure, but, I mean, does it exclusively have to be developed in the Muslim world? I mean, to say that is to say we should shut down international commerce altogether.
But let's get back to the basic issue. Obama appoints a man to head up NASA, and he tells him his principal job is to make people in the Muslim world feel good about their historic contributions to science and engineering, and the most important science and engineering advancements made in the Muslim world occurred 800 years ago during the so-called Golden Age in the Muslim world.
Well, I mean, yes, you know, I guess these historical, you know, founding of zero and development of, I guess, numerals that you stated could be significant. But, I mean, science is intended to be...
Well, that would be like saying, let's reach out to the illegal immigrant and make them feel good about their advancements in engineering because they were advanced in paving roads 1,000 years ago. I mean, this is absurd. Why are we continuously debasing the advancements of the West and the freedoms of the West in order to cater to these people? Why? Why? No answer.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Between the United States and Israel is unbreakable. It encompasses our national security interests, our strategic interests, but most importantly, the bond of two democracies who share a common set of values and whose people have grown closer and closer as time goes on.
When I became the NASA administrator, or before I became the NASA administrator, he charged me with three things. One was he wanted me to help re-inspire children to want to get into science and math. He wanted me to expand our international relationships. And third, and perhaps foremost, he wanted me to find a way to reach out to the Muslim world and engage much more with dominantly Muslim nations to help them feel good about their historic contribution to science and engineering.
Blue Monday.
This is Alice in Wonderland under Obama. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Everything is backwards. There is nothing the man does that's straight up and understandable. So he appoints Charles Frank Charlie Bolden Jr. to be the head of NASA. And then he has this good man, this fine man, this test pilot, this man who flew 100 missions as a Marine Corps aviator in Vietnam. He flew into North and South Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia, in the A-6A intruder. He was an astronaut, became an astronaut in 1981, served as a pilot on STS-61C, STS-31. In other words, he was the real McCoy in terms of a NASA astronaut. However, he's not a real administrator. There's a huge difference between a pilot and an administrator. Moreover, I would believe that a correct appointment in NASA would be an engineer of some sort rather than a military man. But the issue is, why would our backwoods president tell the head of NASA to reach out to the Muslim world to make them feel good about their historic contributions to science and engineering, and even worse, try to develop a space mission for Indonesia, the world's largest Muslim nation? Do you want your tax dollars being used so that Indonesia can get a space program? This is crazy. The whole thing is upside down. That's why it's a controversy. We're also talking about fake disability pensions amongst some cops and some firemen, with a story about FDNY Lieutenant whatever his name is, John McLaughlin, who was literally run off with a fat tax-exempted disability pension despite competing in triathlons and such. He gets $86,000 a year disability pension, which is not taxable. You hear this? Not taxable. Claims that in his last year on the job, he suddenly got shortness of breath, and as a result, he was entitled to a disability pension. You want to talk about any of these topics, Obama emboldening the Muslims or the disability pensions, we can do that. And again, don't get me wrong. I salute Charles Bolden's amazing career. He should be praised for what he has contributed to this nation. But the fact that his career to this point had been so heroic highlights the enormity of Obama's inadequacies. I believe Obama has managed to poison the mind of a man who has given so many decades of real service to this nation. Bolden was the kind of man who could have been the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He could have even have been Secretary of State. He's a good diplomat. But he's not qualified to be the head of NASA, in my opinion. I believe Bolden has fallen under the influence of a smooth-talking Chicago politician who has frankly poisoned his mind. And I think Obama has destroyed a great man. And instead of emboldening America, Bolden has emboldened the Muslims. But the real question is, aside from the double talk, the liberal insanity of the double talk to make them feel good about their contributions, when the most significant Muslim contributions to science were made about 800 years ago, they developed algebra, Arabic numerals, they named some stars, they gave us the zero. The Arabic numerals are super important, but this was not done now. It was done about 800 years ago. Would you like to talk about any of this? New York, WOR, Ed, go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I just wanted to point out to you that Arabic numerals are not Arabic at all. They're actually Hindu. We call them Arabic because we got them from the Arabs, but the Arabs got them from the Hindus.
That's
true of many Muslim inventions. If you look carefully, you'll see that actually it was many Jews and Christians under Islamic rule who came up with many of the inventions and scientific achievements that you're talking
about. Yeah, and these occurred, by the way, during the golden age of Islam, when they were more tolerant of Jews and Christians and permitted them to actually work in science and medicine. Unlike recent times when Jews and Christians were reviled and still are reviled in the Muslim world.
Well, I wouldn't say that they were tolerant. They just hadn't gotten around to killing them and chasing them off yet. If you look over here, over the entire history of Islamic rule, Christians and Jews have virtually disappeared, where at one point they were a majority, even when the Muslims were in charge. All they've done is chase them off, and by that, they've destroyed their culture. If you remember...
Well, it's the same way Hitler chased the Jews out and, as a result, lost World War II. Exactly. You know, Hitler would be ruling the world today but for the fact that he had an obsession against the Jews. That's a fact of reality. Had he not driven out some of the greatest scientific minds of the last century, and I can name three of them, Enrico Fermi, Albert Einstein, and Niels Bohr, I believe all three of these men, had they remained in Germany, the Germans would have developed the atomic bomb, many, many other inventions, and they would have ruled the world. Isn't that correct?
There's no doubt. They chased off the people who were... The Jews are the longtime free thinkers. That's why everybody wonders why Jews are ahead of everybody else. It's because they invented free thinking.
Well, let me go back to the issue of the Arabic numerals, which you say come from from India. Was it after the Muslim conquest of a portion of that world that they inherited these numerals? Is that what you're suggesting?
Exactly. The Muslims started using the numerals for the Muslims were working on all kinds of scientific stuff, and they used the Hindu numerals to
write in some of their books, write scientific stuff, and they adopted the Hindu numerals, and then they did add zero, but a lot of people were working on zero. Zero isn't exclusively,
But why is it that Obama is obsessed with reaching out to the Muslim world to the extent that he would appoint a man to NASA and tell him his main mission is to make the Muslim world feel good about their historic contributions to science and engineering? What sense does this make to you?
Obama is a multiculturalist. To Obama, is a valid culture. It's just as good as any other culture. And they're a little down right now, and we're up. So, you know, knock America and build up the Muslims. It's only fair.
What a wonderful thing to have a man of such superb qualities in the White House. Isn't it great? Thanks for the call. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let's go to Peggy in Chicago. Peggy, go ahead, please.
I'm in Chicago, and this morning I heard this announcement, you know, the one where the guy supposedly from NASA was saying all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, this is an actor. This is phony. This is real. When I talked to your producer, I said, it's not real. And he said, it's real. It's real. I'm telling you it's real. And I said, it cannot be real. First of all, you don't have a guy from NASA. This is NASA. We put a man in space. First guy on the moon, remember that? Remember Apollo 13 when those guys were dead five different ways and they came up with changing all kinds of filters and everything. They came back home alive. There was no chance for those guys. That was American engineering on the line. I mean, they just were spectacular. And here's this guy telling me he's an administrator for NASA, which
yes.
I know about. Okay,
and yes, and instead of glorifying the advancement of space exploration under the previous administrations, meaning NASA itself. Instead, he is told his mission is to reach out to the Muslim world and make them feel good about their supposed contributions to science and engineering.
All those guys were known for their heroism and self-sacrifice. I mean, if you got to be part
of... I understand that, but isn't this symptomatic of who Obama really is?
I think this... I mean, it sounds crazy. First of all, you don't tell a guy, reach out to the world. Oh, and by the way, make a special thing to reach out to the Muslim world. Well, if you're going to reach out to the world, that's enough, okay? You don't have to say it again. And
But Obama has a special affinity for the Muslim world. Let's not forget why. Both of his fathers were Muslim. So he has a certain emotional attachment and a fantasy about the superiority or the dignity thereof of the Muslim world. And he's constantly pandering to the Muslim world. Most Americans are fed up with this, by the way.
It sounds a little nuts, doesn't it? Doesn't it sound
I wouldn't do a psychological analysis of Obama. I think that the more Americans see of him, the more they know he's not up to the job, and they know that he's just faking it, frankly. It's a president on training wheels, and even the training wheels have come off. Thank you for the call. I think that we've talked about this sufficiently for the people to get the picture of who is actually at the head of our nation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
This September, leaders will meet to agree how to achieve the Millennium Development Goals, when each nation will have its own distinctive contribution to make. New challenges have also emerged, which have tested this organization as much as its member states. One such is the struggle against terrorism. Another challenge is climate change, where careful account must be taken of the risks faced by smaller, more vulnerable nations, many of them from the Commonwealth.
That's Queen Elizabeth already pushing the big lie about climate change. It's just unbelievable. It would be laughable if it was not so deadly what these people are doing. You could see she's reading a script given to her by the dunces in England who have now bought into the entire lie about man-induced climate change and blah, blah, blah. And then she adds the pabulum of we have to take account as we take into the risks facing smaller, more vulnerable nations, many of which are in the Commonwealth. Well, I want to remind you that the Queen and the royal family have lived off the proceeds of the plunder of these smaller, more vulnerable nations. And instead of talking about something as diluted as climate change, if she really cared about smaller, more vulnerable nations, they ought to give back a few castles to the peasants in these smaller, more vulnerable nations. Because the nations themselves were denuded by the ancestors of the royal family. It's the same lie that was started by our own lying Al Gore. And I believe we now have some of the sex tapes, do we not? Okay, so let's begin. Stop. Here you will hear in deadpan, if you missed it last week before we all went on vacation, something that should be heard by every American who believes that Al Gore is a sincere, earth-saving man. Here is Al Gore, horny man. Al Gore, you know what amazes me? You take a guy like Governor Spitzer, ex-Governor Spitzer. He is a man as the governor of a state like New York, who also had the power to oversee Wall Street. And this schmuck has an addiction to hookers. And this schmuck paid for hookers by credit card. Credit cards that were billed through the Bahamas, and he doesn't think he would get caught. So the schmuck Spitzer gets caught and gets thrown out of office. Now, of course, he's found his proper place in the world of the media, and that's CNN, where he belonged from the beginning. And now we have Al Gore, who you could see from the get-go is a putz. You could hear the way he talks. You could see the way he acts. He's a rich boy, a rich man's son, a man who's never really come up with anything in his entire life. He inherited the money from his father, Senator Gore, who worked for Occidental Coal. And you know that from the get-go, Al Gore was a schmuck. And that you also know he's a bit of a huffing puffing kind of horny guy. And with all of his money and all of his acclaim, all he really wants is a good rub down. So he goes to some beat up old masseuse in a hotel in Oregon, and here she is. Listen.
He then tried another tactic as though he had very suddenly switched personalities and began in a pleading tone, pleading for release of his second chakra there. There's so much tension being held. This was yet another euphemism for sexual activity he was requesting, put cleverly as though it were a spiritual request or something. I was further deeply shocked and repulsed as my realization of what was happening sunk in, and especially as my mind was now reeling from this absolute betrayal by someone I had inherently trusted as a good guy who cares about people, including me, because of his public persona.
So the old beat-up masseuse was shocked by Al Gore's chakra. And the main question is, why did she wait so many years to come forward? She has an answer for that as well. Do we have the tape where she says her girlfriends told her not to come forward because he was about to save the world? Do we have that? We don't have that. That's the scream. But let's go back to the first one, gentlemen, because that unto itself is worth listening to. Do we have that?
I knocked on the door. Al Gore opened the door, and I introduced myself, saying, "Hello, I'm your massage therapist. How shall I call you?" He answered, "Call me Al," with a big smile as he stretched out his arms to wrap me into an embrace as a greeting in the inner entryway of the room as I stepped inside. He was wearing a long sleeve.
Now, let's pause right there. You know right off the get-go he's a putz. He's the kind of guy, I used to know a guy like this who would always grab women. He was a big guy, and he would always grab women at a party and pull them towards him so he could feel their bosoms against his chest. And the women knew it. He had this ick factor. Eventually, he became a doctor just so he could rob the drugs out of the cabinets of the hospitals in the East Bay. Go on, please.
He described a grueling travel schedule over the previous week or two, mostly by air, and he said he needed his gluteus, hamstring, quadriceps, and adductors worked on, as well as his abdominal area besides his back and whole body. I inquired if this was due to the long flight hours, and he said yes. I mentally noted that a request for adductor work is a bit unusual. In the massage world, sometimes it is said to
They're all experts on anatomy. They go to school, massage. All right, I have nothing against people who have to make a living anyway, as long as it's an honest living. But the fact of the matter is, these sex tapes are very important because it proves beyond a reasonable doubt that Al Gore is a laughable person not to be taken seriously.
Savage.
When I began doing the requested abdominal work on him, he became somewhat vocal with muffled moans, etc., and he began demanding. demanding that I go lower and massaging on the abdominal area. I was shocked, and I did not massage beyond what is considered a safe non-sexual area of the abdomen. He further insisted and acted angry, becoming verbally sharp and loud. I went into much deeper shock as I realized it appeared he was demanding sexual favors or sexual behaviors. I decided to declare I got so freaked I just got, but I got a tiny bit mad under my terror. I decided to clarify things by asking him, as he angrily complained that I was not doing what he wanted, for him to show me exactly what he wanted me to do, such as wearing a massage. I said, well, why don't you show me? I thought, this is too nuts. He grabbed my right hand hard, shoved it down under the sheet to his pubic hair area, and said to me, there, in a very sharp, loud, angry-sounding tone.
Well, that's because he's suffering the disability of global warming-itis. Now, global warming-itis should be entered into the DSM, I think it's called, very shortly. Global warming-itis is an illness that is characterized by an extraordinarily high body temperature as a result of sexual repression that manifests itself in the concept that the entire globe is overheating and that a catastrophe is about to befall humankind. It's all based upon suppressed sexuality. It's clearly a Freudian problem that can be relieved in the most basic of manners. But then again, if you had a wife who spent most of her time running around with a camera, with her hand wrapped around the lens of a Nikon, as opposed to, well, you get the picture. What you have is the package called Al Gorleone. There's not much more we could say about it except to go on to the next clip of your hero, the greatest scientist in the world, somebody who encompasses the genius of Albert Einstein, Leonardo da Vinci, perhaps, Niels Bohr. If you wrap them all into one, they would not add up to one finger of the genius of Al Gore. Listen to clip 33.
He was moaning, groaning, moving, and acting in a very suggestive way. It was unreal. I never even had any of my hotel clients get angry, yell, or act out at me before.
Now, hold on. She said any of her hotel clients. Notice that she's very clever, this one. He was moaning, groaning, and acting out. She was never in a hotel. She never had any of her hotel clients act out this way. So you have to understand where she's coming from. But let's hear the rest of it.
Episode, I realized much to my horror that I was in the perfect storm and that I was in a room with someone who was Teflon-coated in terms of credibility and celebrity status.
Uh-huh. Okay, finally we hear, this is Al Gore's accuser, and you won't hear this on the local channels because they cover for him. The government media complex is one and the same. It is an old girl's network. Listen to the last one.
He then tried another tactic as though he had very suddenly switched personalities and began in a pleading tone, pleading for release of his second chakra there. There's so much tension being held. This was yet another euphemism for sexual activity he was requesting, put cleverly as though it were a spiritual request or something. I was further deeply shocked and repulsed as my realization of what was happening sunk in, and especially as my mind was now reeling from this absolute betrayal by someone I had inherently trusted as a good guy who cares about people, including me, because of his public persona.
Well, as I say, we can see that poor Al Gore is a victim of his illness, global warming-itis, GWI. It's a condition that requires intense body work on a regular basis. And if they don't get it, the illness manifests itself further and further. Until eventually it reaches a fever pitch of insanity and you win the Nobel Prize amongst the others at the UN suffering GWI, global warming-itis. And of course, they can relieve themselves in a legal manner in Europe. Unfortunately, here in America, for Al Gore, that is not the case. We are listening to the Savage Nation. The whole world is one of foibles at this point. And the foibles are endless, by the way. That's what makes talk radio so wonderful, is that you really have to have a good ear for this stuff. We heard Obama instruct the head of NASA to reach out to the Muslim world so that they can feel good about their historic contributions to science and engineering, which are nil for the past 800 years. We heard Al Gore's accuser speaking about the second chakra and how much she was shocked by the chakra. We then heard the Queen Mother herself speaking before the UN on climate change and how she now suddenly cares about the risks facing smaller, more vulnerable nations. many of which are in the Commonwealth. Of course, that unto itself is worthy of a Punch cartoon of the 1800s, since the entire royal family has benefited from plunder derived from the smaller, more vulnerable nations, which were plundered by their ancestors directly. And I think we should not conclude this sequence of the foibles of modern man unless we go to this liberal jerk. I think it's Julianne Malveau, who wished that Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas was dead. Listen to clip five.
The man is on the court. You know, I hope his wife feeds him lots of eggs and butter, and he dies early like many black men do of heart disease.
But,
well, that's how I feel. I mean, he is an absolutely reprehensible person.
This is what passes for humor on liberal stations. I don't know where that came from. It sounded to me like a hen show, probably a hen show with ignoramuses of the type you've become used to. But when have you last heard anybody on the conservative side wishing some liberal dead? I don't know of any such individual who would do that. First of all, if you wish someone dead, usually you lose your show. That's number one. But to wish that a man as distinguished as Clarence Thomas dies of a heart attack like many other black men, to me, confronted so many violations of the ethics of broadcasting that I do not understand why anyone would ever have this lunatic Julianne Malveau on a show again, other than a show run by somebody of the likes of Whoopi Goldberg. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. So if you want to talk about any of these topics, this is the show to do it. I want to go to my website, MichaelSavage.com, and let's see what's up there today. Lohan ordered to jail. Oh, that's important. Why is this girl in the news every day? I don't understand it. Do you care that Netherlands beat Uruguay 3-2 to advance to the World Cup? In fact, when they were talking about the World Cup, I am so disinterested in sports. I thought that the World Cup and the Supreme Court hearings of Kagan were one and the same. I thought she was advancing in the World Cup, and I'm not referring to soccer in that regard. I mean, she's a competitor in the World Cup. She can easily hold her own next to, let us say, Madeleine Albright. I think that Kagan and Madeleine Albright would be tied in the World Cup, by the way. New York, Frank W.O.R., go ahead, please.
Yes, this is Frank in New Jersey.
Yes, go ahead.
Well, we got the best pizza in the world. Come on down here for some Epicurean pizza. I'd like
okay.
to talk about the super boss here at the NASA.
Yes.
Okay. Obama wants to draw some more attention to the Arabs. I would say we already have an international space station. France, Germany, Japan. What are we going to do? Have an Arab up there? Going to have five prayer sessions a day? Tell the astronauts how to cut their hair? Tell them,
are you kidding me?
Hello?
I'm not kidding you. That you elected him, not me. I didn't vote for this guy.
Vote for him.
Did you vote for him while having a pizza, Frank?
Listen, sausage, pepper, and onion, large, $18 in 20 minutes.
Yeah, and it's hot when you get there, right? It's burning hot where the cheese falls down on your hand.
More pizza in this, more pizza stations in this state than they do.
You know, the difference between pizza on the East Coast and the West Coast is very interesting. The East Coast pizza is very oily, and you know how it's very long, and when you pick it up, the tip has to be flapped over because it's so loose, it's so like thin.
Yeah, you have to support it with a fork.
That's right. But here on the West Coast, it's a totally different experience. There's no oil on the pizza. It's kind of devoid of taste and dry. It's very much like Swedish meatballs as opposed to real meatballs, and that's because we're socialist out here. Even the pizza's dried out on the West Coast.
Try one of our famous pizza places here, and they can deliver over there, you in California.
That would be funny, deliver a pizza. Frank Sinatra used to have stuff delivered from the East Coast by jet. Remember, that was such a big deal. I bought a piece of fish the other day in my fishmonger store. I like that word, fishmonger. And I couldn't believe it. He pulled out a tuna that came in from Fiji that morning. It was like, it was never frozen. It was on ice. It was the most delicious piece of fish I've ever eaten in my life. I said to him, how much does that piece of fish cost you? You know that they pay, I mean, and they're only paying $8, $10 a pound for this stuff wholesale, which is amazing to me. I bought a piece of this fish. It cost me about $7, which I cooked for dinner, about 6 minutes on one side, 4 minutes on the other, virtually no oil, no seasonings. I cook my fish all the way through because if I want sushi, I mean, you're risking worms. You know that. Fish are like any other animal. Inherently, fish have worms in their flesh. You don't want to eat much sushi. I've told you that before. And this whole concept of of uncooked fish is unto itself a public health hazard. But, you know, go tell people that they're eating something that should be cooked. I think you're crazy, because where this started, I don't know, with these chefs today that come out of cooking school. These guys with pimples, they go to a cooking school for 3 months, and they're all celebrity chefs working for a minimum wage. They don't know they're behind from their elbow. My mother knew more about cooking on a four-burner electric stove in Queens than these guys could learn in 30 years. What? Because you put more butter and sugar and salt on it, and it's suddenly gourmet? Or you drizzle oil on it, or you sprinkle raspberries? It can make you puke. Everything they put a fruit on. You ever hear this? Fruit-coated steak. And then they put butter on top of it, and it's salted to death. It's a gourmet meal. Anyway, the point of the story is, don't eat uncooked fish. When you order, when they usually say to you, what do they call it? How do they rephrase this today? Where they serve the fish uncooked in the middle? I don't know what they call it. I forget what they have a name for it, a euphemism for it. I stopped them each. I had it last night in a place. In fact, I went back to a place called Outback. I hadn't been in Outback in years. I have very pedestrian tastes in food, I will admit it. I don't like General McChrystal. I would rather get dental work than sit in a fine restaurant. I have nothing against it. I just can't take it. I feel like I'm getting a haircut. I don't like formality, really. I don't. I'm a simple guy in that regard. I do love good food, and I know the difference between good food and bad food. And I don't like the fuss around food. It makes me uncomfortable. I want to eat and be left alone. So I go back to Outback. Now, there's one flaw in Outback. I went there because I didn't want to wait online. I didn't want to talk to anybody. The number one problem in Outback, the chain, is not the food. It's the lamps over the table. Whoever the lighting designer was should be arrested. Every time I go to sit there, that lamp hangs over the table. The light hits you right in the eye, and I feel like I'm in Dragnet being grilled for a crime I didn't commit. That's number one. So I have to start with putting, either I turn the light bulb out like in The Godfather 2, The Godfather where he turns out the bulb. That's number one. You got to get like a wet handkerchief. Then you can't see your food, so you can't do that. And most people think you're crazy if you turn a light out. And or you hang a napkin over it, which you risk, you risk setting the napkin on fire. Or three, you put a, you hang something over the thing. All right, so I ordered a piece of fish, but I said to the young lady, they usually reform masseuses. I found a high relationship between, they're tattooed. They usually have nose rings and earrings, but they're reformed like Al Gore masseuses, and they take these jobs. I'm nothing against them. By the way, I'm a sexual libertarian. I want to be very clear about that. I've said that in my Playboy interview. I've tried to tell you that on the show for years. I've been miscast. What people actually do for their sexual gratification is not my business, number one, nor do I give a damn what they do. Sexuality is very complex. People are tense. Whatever they do is their business, as long as they leave children alone. I'm not a moralist in that regard, okay? All right, so as I said, the girls are generally reformed masseuses, and they don't really understand food. They usually come from a very poor background where they grew up on, like, mayonnaise sandwiches and white bread, you know, mixed in with the mother. Whatever the mother fell out of the crack pipe, they grabbed off the floor and sold on the street to buy food. So they don't really know food. So they say, well, blackened. Or there's another word they use. I can't even remember. Where they coat the outside and it's crisp. I say, fine, just make sure. Seared. I'm sorry. Seared mahi, which means it's burnt. Where they put and they burn the fish. Unto itself, I don't mind seared, but I want them to cook it all the way through. So I said, make sure it's cooked all the way through. And by the way, I add a baked potato, and I said, no butter. All right, the bread, number one, you could throw in the garbage. My seagulls wouldn't eat it off the deck of my house. It's so sugary, you can't eat that bread. Thank God the beer in a bottle, you can't get. You know, I don't drink Australian beer myself. It's a migraine. I drink only certain beers. I'm not going to mention them because I don't promote them. I like a certain type of beer, the German beer is brewed by the certain decree in the 1631. They're the best beers in the world. So I had a couple of beers, and I got the fish. The potato comes laden with sour cream and bacon on it. I said to you, no butter. She says to me, but you didn't say no sour cream. I said, honey, I'm on a low-fat diet. Do you understand sour cream and bacon are on that list? She didn't know what I was talking about. I didn't get angry. It's like there's certain things you can't get mad about. You know what I'm saying? I said, all right, just bring me. You know, it's a torture for me to eat out. I'm a quirky person. Admittedly, I'm very picky. Even though I can be very, very blue-collar simple, within the blue-collar simple, the food has to be on a very high level. You understand? But I would still recommend that you go to Outback. It's a great place. I'll be right back.
There are a lot of people who wrote these eulogies for Senator Byrd in the newspapers, and I read a bunch of them, and they mentioned that he once had a fleeting association with a Ku Klux Klan. And what does that mean? I'll tell you what it means. He was a country boy from the hills and hollows of West Virginia. He was trying to get elected. And maybe he did something he shouldn't have done.
All right. Well, there's Bill Clinton justifying for Senator Robert Byrd's Ku Klux Klan background. I guess that would be sort of, a German politician saying that during the eulogy for Adolf Hitler, there were mention that he had a fleeting association with the Nazi Party. And what does that mean? It means he was a country boy from Vienna who was trying to get elected. That's great. I mean, this gets better by the day. You know, the foibles of humanity are what I do for a living. So pardon me for having an ear for this kind of thing. This is Bill Clinton saying you should overlook Robert Byrd's youth and his youthful indiscretions, as it were. All right, let's be very, very liberal about that. I mean, everybody makes a mistake. Nobody is perfect. That is true. However, politicians should not be members of the Ku Klux Klan. I do not believe that that should be a qualification. Here's a story. Just came out here in the local paper. But you got to hear the headline because, we've gotten used to the idiots in the media by now, the mainstream or midstream media. And the headline, I think that they called, I had a look at this one, Seafaring Immigrants Intercepted. Suddenly they're seafaring immigrants. Groups of seafaring illegal immigrants, groups of seafaring immigrants have been caught coming ashore along Southern California's coast. Today, 18 of the geniuses landed at Marine Corps Camp Pendleton. U.S. Border Patrol agent Michael Jimenez says agents detained 16 Mexican citizens traveling in a skiff after they came ashore around 1:50 a.m. Tuesday. He says agents acting on a call from military officials detained 18 others walking across Camp Pendleton a few hours later after they had been dropped off by a boat. So they're calling them seafaring immigrants now in the moronic liberal press, seafaring immigrants. I guess we're going to hear that the illegal immigrants now should be, maybe there should be an outreach from the U.S. Navy to seafaring illegal immigrants so they can be brought into the U.S. Navy. I mean, maybe that'll be the next directive from Obama. Instead of directing the head of NASA to reach out to Muslims for their contributions, which were made 800 years ago, perhaps because the illegals now coming in from Mexico are using all sorts of creative means, including broken rowboats, this shows that they have some ancient affinity for the sea that could be of some advancement to the U.S. Navy. After all, our warships need a few good men, and there's no reason to not bring them right into the Navy. I mean, they could be put in charge of the diversity brigade on a ship, I suppose, or something to that effect, in order to make them feel good about their cultural and their cultural contributions to seafaring. So that's the world we live in. It gets crazier by the day. And I, you know, you can't put your finger on it anymore. It's sort of like the dike has been broken and the deluge has swamped America. The West is being swamped with insanity on a level I cannot believe is possible. But I think this is what you get when you have an incompetent president who chooses incompetence for virtually every department around him. He got where he is, make no mistake about it, through affirmative action. I stand by those words. He then got further by threatening to sue. I stand by those words. And so the only thing the entire administration knows how to do is sue. So when the people of Arizona say enough is enough with illegal immigrants, what did this group of affirmative action lawyers do? They sue the people of Arizona for trying to protect their land from a swamp of illegal immigrants.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, you see, this is a very important time in American history. So you go on AOL, and here's the news. How to tell if your deck needs finishing. Jonas Brothers perform live at the Grove. Manson follower seeks release. Bobby Fischer's body exhumed, and Hillary Clinton rebukes Russia. See, now you understand why the people with the Blackberries and the text messaging are so brilliant and how much they know about American history and freedom. It's astounding to me, but it gets worse. If you were to go to Yahoo.com and take a look at what the morons are getting under, when you click on Yahoo, let's say you have Yahoo Mail, right? Shake up in the bidding for LeBron. Hello? Free agent Buzz. Ice Road Truckers. Lindsay Lohan. Heidi Montag. These are the lead stories on Yahoo News. To give you some idea of the trouble America is in, it's astounding. Demand for financial aid grows at college. Well, sure, you need money in order to buy medical marijuana. Tiger Woods turns icy when asked personal questions in Ireland. Oh, here we go. Here's the news. Queen Elizabeth challenges UN to confront global dangers. Without defining what the global dangers are, maybe it's Michael Savage going to England. And Justice Department sues to block Arizona immigration law. Wow. Holy God. Well, let's take a look at that one. What exactly is the government's case against the Arizona immigration law? Well, specifically, Holder, our inimitable attorney general, is going to say that Arizona's law violates the Constitution's Supremacy Clause by setting up a state-level immigration law regime. He's going to say that SB 1070 conflicts with federal immigration law and enforcement, and that immigration laws are drafted and enforced by DOJ and the Department of Homeland Security. The problem is DOJ is not doing their job. So here Obama is filing a lawsuit against Arizona and its new immigration law. It's no doubt in my mind that the case is going to go all the way to the Supreme Court. And the main arguments that the Fed government is going to use is that the Arizona state law supersedes federal law according to the Constitution. And because the judges will be looking at the issue purely from a legalistic perspective, I believe that the Supreme Court will rule in favor of Obama. But the key point is that the federal government has abdicated its responsibility in terms of enforcing immigration law. It refuses to enforce the law against illegal aliens. Arizona had no choice but to step into the void left by the Obama administration. But until the federal government does its job and controls the flow of illegal aliens, the problem will not be solved. Nevertheless, I make a prediction today that the Supreme Court is going to take a very narrow legalistic view, and that they're going to side with Obama to the detriment of the American people. That's my opinion. 1-800-449-8255. Look, I know you worry about what's going on in Afghanistan, what's going on in the Gulf, and what's going on in the White House. But with all of that, you shouldn't have to worry about your computer on top of everything else. So go visit my advertisers at carbonite.com. They'll back up all your important files so they're safe no matter what happens. Use my offer code SAVAGE, and you're going to get 2 months free with your subscription. That's carbonite.com, offer code SAVAGE. Obama has poisoned the mind of a wonderful man. He sent Charles Bolden, a Marine Corps general who flew 100 missions in Vietnam and piloted the space shuttle, to pander to the Muslim world. Listen.
I know it's very rude to ask this of a guest, but my first question to you is, why are you here in the region?
Oh, I appreciate you asking the question. I'm here in the region. It's sort of the first anniversary of President Barack Obama's visit to Cairo and his speech there when he gave what has now become known as Obama's Cairo Initiative, where he announced that he really wanted this to be a new beginning of the relationship between the United States and the Muslim world.
That is really shameful. But listen to what else Obama told this wonderful man to do.
When I became the NAS administrator, or before I became the NAS administrator, he charged me with three things. One was he wanted me to help re-inspire children to want to get into science and math. He wanted me to expand our international relationships. And third, and perhaps foremost, he wanted me to find a way to reach out to the Muslim world and engage much more with dominantly Muslim nations to help them feel good about their historic contribution to science and engineering.
Now, what Muslim contributions to science is he talking about? The Muslim world hasn't invented anything in over 800 years.
Now, are you in a sort of diplomatic role to win hearts and minds?
No,
in the
not
Muslim
at all.
World?
It's not a diplomatic anything. What it is it's trying to expand our outreach so that we get more people who can contribute to the things that we do. The International Space Station is as great as it is because we have a conglomerate of about 15 plus nations who have contributed something to that partnership that has made it what it is today. It is a matter of trying to reach out and get the best of all worlds, if you will. And there is much to be gained by drawing in the contributions that are possible from the Muslim nation.
This man's mind has been poisoned by Obama, who today was busy kissing the behind of Israel's Netanyahu to try to make up for his mistakes.
The bond between the United States and Israel is unbreakable. It encompasses our national security interests, our strategic interests, but most importantly, the bond of two democracies who share a common set of values and whose people have grown closer and closer as time goes on.
Ah, yes. And that time I kicked Netanyahu out of the White House, that was just a misunderstanding, of course.
We discussed the issue of Gaza. And I commended Prime Minister Netanyahu on the progress that's been made in allowing more goods into Gaza. We've seen real progress on the ground. I think it's been acknowledged that it has moved more quickly and more effectively than many people anticipated.
All right. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Joining us now with an exclusive is Jack Hunter.
Well, I appreciate being with you, Michael. Something I wanted to talk about, and, you know, I guess it sort of just struck me funny. A lot of people have been talking about this story, this gentleman, Gary Faulkner, who the media has dubbed the Bin Laden Hunter. And to refresh people's memory, in mid-June, this gentleman, Gary Faulkner, was arrested by Pakistan officials. I think he was found with a large sword, a pistol, night vision equipment, and claimed to be looking for Osama bin Laden in northern Pakistan. Well, he was arrested. Of course, he was deported back to the United States last week, and the media's had a lot of fun. He's a very colorful character. He's an out-of-work construction worker from Colorado. But I think there's a larger point to be made here that is sort of going over a lot of people's heads.
What is that?
Gary Faulkner was specifically looking for Osama bin Laden. Here's a man who's still enraged about 9/11. He's still upset about what happened on that dreadful, probably one of the most tragic days in American history, and he was primarily targeting the person who was behind it, being bin Laden or Al-Qaeda or whatever you want to, however you want to look at it. I think this is noteworthy because as we look at the situation in Afghanistan over 9 years into this war, have we lost sight, not only as a country, but more importantly, our government who conducts these wars, the Obama administration, the people he puts in charge? Who was crazier, an enraged American mad about 9/11 who's still looking for Osama bin Laden, wants to bring him to justice or kill him, either way, or our government for whom bin Laden seems to be an afterthought at this point? I think it's certainly worth examining that and thinking about that. What are we doing in Afghanistan at this point? If General McChrystal and David Petraeus told us in 2009 that there is no longer any al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, Leon Panetta, the CIA director, reiterated this fact that there's no longer any al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. What exactly are we doing there? If we're not fighting al-Qaeda, who are we fighting? Are we fighting the Taliban? When we went into Afghanistan in 2001, we were angry that the Taliban had harbored al-Qaeda, Osama bin Laden, and what happened with 9/11. We wanted to go in there, kick butt, quite frankly, and take care of business. Well, are we fighting them? Well, according to the Los Angeles Times in March, and take a listen to this, the Afghan Taliban does not want to be seen as or heard of having the same relationship with al-Qaeda that they had in the past. Who says that? A senior official who wishes to remain anonymous, who is familiar with the latest intelligence. And the article also notes that indications of al-Qaeda-Taliban strains, get this, are at odds with recent public statements by the Obama administration.
Hmm.
So, if you want to break it all down, who is the bigger loon? Who is more crazy? Gary Faulkner trying to find Osama bin Laden and exact justice, pay him back for what happened on 9/11, or the United States and our government, who went to Afghanistan for precisely the same reason Gary Faulkner went to Pakistan, to take care of our enemies, to pay back the people who did what they did to us on 9/11 and have forgotten all about it? That's a good question to ask. I think more Americans should be asking this question as the Afghanistan war goes into its past its ninth year, well into a decade. Now, one of the reasons I wanted to bring this up on your program, Michael, when Obama announced his escalation in Afghanistan many months ago, and I tuned into talk radio, being, you know, sort of tuned into what's going out there, especially on the conservative side of things, I expected for many of our peers in talk radio and the other hosts to sort of say either Obama, you know, applaud him for escalating the war in Afghanistan, or maybe that he wasn't doing enough. You, Michael, among the many national hosts out there, were one of the few people to rightly ask what many Americans were probably asking that evening. Why? What are we doing here?
Exactly.
What is the purpose? What is the end game? What does victory look like? Is this worth the cost in lives and dollars, putting our soldiers in harm's way, escalating the war in Afghanistan? You were one of the few people, and you also added that it's easy for a lot of these talk radio, as you put it, this was your words, Michael, chicken hawks out there, to sort of, you know, okay, well, we need to escalate in Afghanistan with no end game and not talk about the fact that there is no end game. I think it's very important to ask these questions. And it's also important, looking at, you know, going into Afghanistan for a decade, the situation with Stanley McChrystal and the controversial Rolling Stone article, who I think McChrystal, in his criticism, was absolutely right. Was he not following the chain of command? That's true, and Obama did what he had to do. But his criticisms were correct. What are we doing there? It was sort of an on the ground questioning of the same sort of things you were asking watching Obama when he was talking about the escalation. What are we doing? You know, a part of the now infamous Rolling Stone article by Michael Hastings, which led to, of course, McChrystal's resignation and appointing David Petraeus as the command in Afghanistan. The overall point of that article was not just the tension between McChrystal and the Obama administration, but the utter futility of our mission. Michael Hastings wrote, and it's worth pointing this out because a lot of people don't really talk about that aspect of it, but Michael Hastings wrote in that article, quote, "Even those who support McChrystal and his strategy of counterinsurgency know that whatever the general manages to accomplish in Afghanistan, it's going to look more like Vietnam than Desert Storm." And that's something to think about. Hastings continues, "It's not going to look like a win, smell like a win, or taste like a win," says Major General Bill Mayville, who serves as Chief of Operations for McChrystal. Now get this, this is what Mayville says, "This is going to end in an argument."
Mm-hmm.
That's something Americans need to think about as we enter a decade of being in Afghanistan. If this is going to end in an argument, if Michael, as you asked on the night Obama announced his escalation, what are we doing there? You know, retired Colonel Douglas McGregor, who was a primary architect of Operation Desert Storm, was a guest on Fox News' Freedom Watch program with the host Judge Andrew Napolitano. And Napolitano asked McGregor forthright, "What are our prospects for Afghanistan?" And McGregor said forthright, "It's a hopeless endeavor and a bottomless pit." Those are two quotes from McGregor. What are we doing there? Is Gary Faulkner so crazy to be concentrating Osama bin Laden when our country is completely taking its eye off the ball? If there's no al-Qaeda there, as Petraeus says and Leon Panetta says, if the Taliban are distancing themselves as far as possible from al-Qaeda, what are we doing there? Who is asking the big questions? And to my knowledge, nobody really is, certainly not the people in charge, Barack Obama or any of his leading officials, and it's sad.
Exactly.
You know, Michael, I often like to make the point that conservatives should question their government in all aspects. And for it seems like a lot of conservatives want to question government when it comes to taxation, when it comes to, oh, I don't know, cap and trade, national health care, anything you could imagine, except when it becomes to one of the most expensive and important things and a primary constitutional duty, I might add, of our federal government, foreign policy. With the situation in Afghanistan, with this liberal socialist president pushing us forward on sort of a fool's errand, if you will, we don't really know what we're doing at this point, it is time to ask the big questions. You know, I always like to make the point that conservatives too often treat foreign policy like a lot of liberals treat welfare policy. If you ask any liberal and you say, you know, well, since the Great Society and LBJ, all we've done is, you know, we've spent more money on trying to help the poor, we subsidize the problem, and in fact, we've created more poor, and you take a situation like Afghanistan, you say, what are we doing? Why are we there? What's the end game? What's victory? And a lot of conservatives tend to say, well, we just have to do more. Maybe that's not the answer. Maybe Douglas McGregor, who is an architect of Operation Desert Storm, is right. Maybe we should start listening to some of these military people who, like McChrystal, all in all, in that Rolling Stone article, threw his hands up and is like, what are we doing? I don't get it. You know, George Will, a conservative columnist George Will, who I agree with sometimes and not other times, put it perfectly, what's going on with sort of our American mentality as it relates particularly to Afghanistan. Says Will, quote, "Those Americans who say Afghanistan is a test of America's staying power are saying we must stay there because we are there. This is steady work, but treats perseverance as a virtue regardless of context or consequences, and makes futility into a reason for persevering." Will is absolutely right. It's sort of a vicious cycle. Well, we have to stay there because we're already there. What are we winning? What are we doing? Is it worth it to our troops? Is it worth spending $1 trillion? What's the end game? Are we fighting Al-Qaeda? What does this have to do with ending or fighting the war on terror? We need to ask these big questions. If Gary Faulkner is crazy, being a lone individual, I mean, out-of-work construction worker from Colorado who travels to Pakistan lurking for Osama bin Laden, what are we doing to send 100,000 troops to Afghanistan, pretty much forgetting about Osama bin Laden, admitting that Al-Qaeda is no longer in Afghanistan? What are we doing? Who is crazier? That's the big question I would like Americans to start asking. What is crazier?
Thanks for the report, Jack.
Well, as always, I appreciate you having me on, Michael, and you can find out about this and more at SouthernAvenger.com. Y'all take care.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
Joining us now on the Savage Nation for an update on what she sees going on at the circus called Washington, D.C., is Representative Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann.
Hey, Michael, I wanted you to know how excited I was to be included on a list with you. The TownHallMagazine.com released a list, and I just felt so excited to be in your company. It was the top 100 Americans that are the most hated by the left. And I just want to read this for the sake of your listeners. It says, Michael Savage makes it a habit to offend the sensibilities of bleeding heart liberals daily. He eviscerates leftist arguments. He sends red diaper doper babies cowering back to their mother's basements. Also, it goes on to say that you have a very strong defense of borders. Gee, so do 3/4 of the American people, at least. And you oppose illegal immigration. And as everyone knows in the world, that landed you on a blacklist in the United Kingdom in 2009, which banned you from visiting Britain. They go on to say that, like the American left, the British progressives deem your speech as, quote, too dangerous. Isn't that interesting when liberals call your speech, call telling the truth, too dangerous? That's what you're doing. You are busy telling the truth. I was excited to also be included on that list. And the reason for that was because I am Speaker Pelosi's number one top target in the country to defeat this fall. And that's absolutely true. My opponent has already been up on TV. She's already running ads, lying about my record. At my website, MichelleBachmann.com, we have more information about this. They're lying about things that I have said. And this is what these people do. They run ads, they start their campaigns, they're negative, they aren't about solutions for the country. It's all about tearing people down, not building people up. And that's, and our country is one of being united. And what's amazing to me about Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Leader Harry Reid, and President Barack Obama, these people pretend that they're the great uniters of our country, and yet it seems like every one of their policies that has come down in the last 18 months has been about dividing us, taking it, tearing us apart. Our nation seems more divided now than it, before President Obama came into office.
Exactly.
And I think that's what's so great about your program and what you've been trying to tell your listeners is you're trying to tell the truth. Part of that is what is happening in the issue of terrorism. I was at several terrorism conferences this week, and I just wanted to share some information. If your listeners go to the State Department's website, particularly on Afghanistan, I was doing some work this week, and I just want to read this to you. During a reporting period, the United States military plan projects to assist in repairing, refurbishing, or providing supplies and equipment to 9 madrasas and 83 mosques. So our American taxpayer dollars, you can find this at the United States Department of State's website. We are using our United States tax dollars to provide supplies and equipment, refurbish, repair 9 madrasas, Islamist schools in Afghanistan, and 83 mosques. Can you imagine if in the United States we took United States tax dollars to build synagogues or to build Baptist churches or Catholic parishes, if we would do that in the United States? But we're doing that in Afghanistan. We're building this in that nation. And that's with the State Department putting on their website information about who and what the Afghanistan government stands for. They say right on the website of the State Department that this is an Islamist nation and that their constitution declares that Islam is the official religion of the state.
Hmm.
They also go on to say that they adhere to the fundamentals of the sacred religion of Islam and that the regime of the Islamic Republic cannot be amended. So in other words, Sharia law is what the country looks to in Afghanistan. And so if they are looking at Sharia law as their ultimate point of reference, and we are building madrasas in Afghanistan and mosques, then what does that say about our involvement in Afghanistan? It's questions that I think that we need to ask. And as we go forward in the United States with a platform based on peace through strength, there's some things that we have to think about.
Well, like what?
I think, number one, we have to look at preserving our United States sovereignty. The President of the United States was in Toronto with the G20 meeting, looking at coalescing all of the economies of the world together as one. That didn't work so well for the EU when the Greece economy, arguably one of the smallest in the world, began to implode. That one implosion of Greece was bringing down all of the EU. Well, we don't want to have the United States economy equated with that of Zimbabwe's, and yet that's essentially what Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner was calling for. What we need to have is a preservation focus on U.S. sovereignty against a lot of these international treaties, judicial rulings, other measures that would be supplanting our United States Constitution. It's very important that what we do in the United States is maintain our adherence to the United States Constitution. I've been working with some other members of Congress to be talking about what we want to stand for, particularly when it comes to Sharia laws. We all know there has been an effort by some to bring about more and more reliance on Sharia law in the United States. And Sharia is a brutally repressive, anti-constitutional, totalitarian program that currently governs in Saudi Arabia, currently governs in Iran and other Islamic states. And we know that there are terrorists who are fighting to impose a worldwide caliphate. As that is going forward, we in the United States need to have our eyes wide open to rejecting the imposition of Sharia here in this country.
Mm-hmm.
There's imposition of Sharia financing through the United States Department of Treasury, through various programs that have gone through that. Also, in my home state of Minnesota, there has been an attempt, and they have offered Sharia financing of housing through the Department of Housing, also Sharia-compliant public charter schools. All of this we need to be aware of as coming in our country. And I think going forward, we need to make sure that anyone who is running for office, we need to ask them these really hard questions. Are you going to stand for preserving United States sovereignty or not of any candidate running for elective office? Are you going to stand for the United States of America being free of the imposition of Sharia law on our citizens? It's a very important issue. And I think, again, one thing, Michael, that you have stood probably stronger than almost anyone on is to make sure when we talk to candidates, will you secure our borders against penetration by terrorists? Because this is a real issue from narco traffickers, from anyone who's trying to come into the United States illegally. Because what we know is that aliens who have violated immigration laws should not be rewarded with privileges of citizenship. This is a very important, serious issue that we need to maintain.
Exactly.
I think another thing that I wanted to talk to you about a little bit is this idea that Steny Hoyer has come up with, saying that they are not planning on having the Democrats pass a budget. Well, they themselves have said that if they can't pass a budget, then they aren't fit to govern. Well, I guess they've just answered their own question. Because what we're hearing now in Washington, D.C., is what they plan to do is after the election is over, because they know people are so upset about the out-of-control spending and the out-of-control debt accumulation, what they know is that people don't want to see the Democrats do any more spending. So what we're being told in the back channels here is that Democrats plan to backload all of their spending after the election. They plan to hold lame duck sessions probably end of November or early on in December, and that's when they plan to do all their spending and any other final policy considerations, because they know that their days might be numbered here in majority. And so they plan, while they still hold their election certificates, and they will stay the majority power until next January. So even if they lose the election, they plan to fully spend us into oblivion yet this year, but do it after the election.
Unbelievable.
That's one more thing, Michael, that I really encourage your listeners to ask every candidate out there running for office. Will you promise that after the election occurs that you won't vote to spend any more taxpayer money that will put this country in debt? Will you vote? Will you make sure that you will not put any major policy changes into office during that time in a lame duck session? I just think it's important that we put the Democrats on notice that we're on to them, and that we're not going to stand for it. There's one more final issue that I want to bring up, and it's this. There is an effort on the health care bill right now as we're looking at repeal on the side of conservatives. There's a little bit of a difference of opinion. There are some conservatives that want to negotiate with Obamacare.
What?
In other words, they're okay with a lot of the basics of Obamacare. They just want to nibble around the edges. And there are other conservatives that are running for office. These are true constitutional conservatives that want 100% repeal of Obamacare. That's the road that we need to go down if we want to bring our country back. And for people who are running as Republicans or conservatives, or if they're Democrats and they're trying to pass themselves off as a conservative, to me, Michael, this is a litmus test. If you are not willing to vote for 100% repeal of Obamacare, there is no way you can hold yourself out as a constitutional conservative. No way. Because the essence of the government takeover of health care is socialized medicine. That's the crown jewel of socialism.
Sure.
So if a candidate is unwilling to sign up with full-scale repeal, then you cannot call yourself a constitutional conservative. It's that simple. So anyway, thank you again so much, and I want to encourage your listeners. MichelleBachman.com is my website. If they want to go there, help me out, find out about more of these issues, about dealing with Sharia law, with Islamist terrorists, with our borders, with health care. I've got it all at MichelleBachman.com. And as always, it is just a privilege to be able to be on your great show.
Michelle Bachman, thanks for the update and for being on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Here it is what's on MichaelSavage.com. A NASA official has softened his claim that the Muslim outreach is the foremost job of NASA. A NASA official stood by Administrator Charles Bolden's statement that part of his mission is to improve relations with Muslim countries, but not his entire mission. Unbelievable. Mexico thwarts Hezbollah attempt to set up South America network. That's unbelievable. That's astounding. In the meantime, Michael Steele from the Republican National Committee is being attacked for calling Afghanistan Obama's war and wondering why we are there. He sounds like repeating everything the American people believe. But listen to that fraud John McShane lay into Steele for telling the truth.
Well, I think those statements are wildly inaccurate, and there's no excuse for them. Chairman Steele sent me an email saying that his remarks were misconstrued. Look, I'm a Ronald Reagan Republican. I believe we have to win here. I believe in freedom. But the fact is that I think that Mr. Steele is going to have to assess as to whether he can still lead the Republican Party as chairman of the Republican National Committee and make an appropriate decision.
What a sad old hack McCain has come. But he's not half the hack Bill Clinton is. Here's Bill Clinton defending Robert Byrd being in the Ku Klux Klan.
There are a lot of people who wrote these eulogies for Senator Byrd in the newspapers, and I read a bunch of them, and they mentioned that he once had a fleeting association with a Ku Klux Klan, and what does that mean? I'll tell you what it means. He was a country boy from the hills and hollows of West Virginia. He was trying to get elected. And maybe he did something he shouldn't have done, and he spent the rest of his life making it up. And that's what a good person does. There are no perfect people. There are certainly no perfect politicians.
Let's stop for a minute. I know you listen because this is one of the last places you can get real, honest, independent, conservative opinions and unfiltered news. And I want you to get the full impact of the Savage Nation. Go to TRN1.com, become a premium member, and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcast at TRN1.com. Click on my picture at TRN1.com today. Now, you want to look at scams? Take a look at my website, Michael Savage. And take a look at how San Francisco city workers pulled off an alleged scam, stealing from taxpayers during a remarkable binge while they were unsupervised. Five highly paid electricians working for the city of San Francisco. And you wonder why these bums keep raising our taxes? It's so the bums like this can keep watching the porn and hiring the hookers. It's a sickening. But wait, you think they're the only ones? If you go down on michaelsavage.com, you're not going to believe what you see. You're going to see something that, it's sickening. Another fat pension for another fireman, no taxes. And this story has to be read by everybody. Because I'm sorry to tell you, as much as I have supported police and firemen over the years, their pensions are out of control. We all know that they're scamming the system. Not all of them, but many of them scam the system. $86,000 disability pension for Marathon Man, Ironman triathlete on FDNY lung disability. They say that retired FDNY Lieutenant John McLaughlin has literally run off with a fat, tax-exempted disability pension, despite being known as Ironman in the Long Island hometown where he regularly trains and competes as a triathlete, the Post has learned. The 55-year-old Long Beach councilman was deemed an asthmatic with diminished lung capacity when the city granted him a three-quarters pay, $86,000 a year disability pension, 2 months after 9/11, earning him the sarcastic moniker Johnny Lungs among neighbors. Despite his pulmonary disability, the fireman, McLaughlin, is a long-distance runner who since his retirement has competed in the New York Marathon, half-marathon races, and even grueling triathlons that also include strenuous biking and swimming, sources said. Now, you got to read the whole story, and you got to see how this wonderful scam artist pulled this off. FDNY medical records show that McLaughlin, a 20-year veteran, was diagnosed with bronchial asthma before 9/11, and he retired in November 2001. What they do is, about a year before they retire, cops and firemen, is they get a shyster doctor to declare that they have some kind of illness. Oh, I hurt my back filing reports. Oh, I hurt my finger firing the trigger at the range. And then they get to go out on full disability, which is tax-free. Did you know that? It's astounding to me. Reached last week, McLaughlin defended his pension as legitimate. He read from the FDNY Medical and Pension Board papers that diagnosed him with bronchial asthma. And under the so-called lung bill, a condition that results in reduced respiratory function, that it's presumed to be job-related for pension purposes. And so he left. And there it is. FDNY doctors have insisted it's not their fault that they're approving lucrative disability pensions that are exempt from state and local income taxes. They said that state laws passed by the labor-friendly state legislature forced them to okay generous disability payouts, even if there's no conclusive evidence linking the firefighters' conditions to their jobs. Did you hear this? Now, I got to ask you something. Don't you see the problem here? Don't you see that there are others, like the so-called disabled Boston fireman or cop who was competing in local bodybuilding contests? Here we are faced with mounting public debt, mounting public outrage, and this guy has full disability. It's and these cops and firemen usually vote as a block for the people who control the budget, and that's the kickback that they get are these pensions. If the news media did their jobs, this type of story would be in the news a dozen times a day, because this is such a widespread scam amongst cops and firemen and other civil servants. It is true that some of them occasionally perform heroic. That is the absolute reality of it. The pensions have to be reined in because we are broke. All of this can be read on MichaelSavage.com.
Savage.